All right, welcome to the Young Turks. Buckle up, it's a Monday show. We got 1,000 fascinating stories for you guys. Later in the program, a couple that we broke. What is Dianne Feinstein's view on Medicare for All? Is she gonna support Bernie Sanders? I don't know, we're gonna find out later in the program. Flint, Michigan, all those folks got arrested that we showed you on Friday. What did they get arrested for? Well, both of the charges are unreal. Like, if you live in Michigan, and maybe they'll start applying this in other places, you ought to be very careful what you wear, because you might get arrested for it or how loudly you talk. So we will explain that a little bit later in the program. And then there are borderline dozens of cases in today's show of how incredibly unintelligent Donald Trump is. It's in story after story after story. It really is remarkable. I was going through an AP story interview with him. I got tired of winning and I stopped counting the stupid comments that he made. That's how bad it got. So that story's a little bit later in the program. And then in this, we've got a number of stories about Fox News and claims of harassment against them. One of which is, you'll see in a second, I'm actually gonna defend them against. But in the second hour, I will not be defending them. Two very bad charges again, so don't miss that either. All right, before we get started on the stories from today, there is late breaking news that I wanted to share with you real quick. So the White House has asked all 100 senators to go to the White House for a briefing on Wednesday about North Korea. That can't be good news. They said they're gonna ask the House to come into the House of Representatives to come in as well for a briefing from the White House on the status of what's happening in North Korea. I am very concerned about that. If we start real hostilities with North Korea, especially with a man this profoundly unintelligent in office, we're gonna break a lot of, what did Colin Powell used to say? You know, the Pottery Barn rule, you break it, you own it. Well, it's a lot of stuff we might be breaking in Asia soon. So very concerning, but when we have more details, I'll do a fuller story on it for you guys. Okay. We're gonna start with a little bit of fun, then we're gonna get into Trump's stupidity here in the first segment. So let's get going. Okay, so now a lot of folks have been sued at Fox News. Obviously, Roger Ailes, the person who led Fox News, has now been ousted because of all the sexual harassment allegations, lawsuits, etc. And then famously last week, Bill O'Reilly as well. So both on sexual harassment claims and ones that were settled. But in Bill O'Reilly's case, Fox News paid out $13 million in harassment claims. 4 out of 5 were sexual in nature. And of course, there are more charges on the way as well. Now, we've pointed out throughout that, well, look, not everybody is getting charged at Fox News. Sean Hannity isn't. Well, now there are new allegations against Sean Hannity. Now, what might be a surprising twist to you guys is that I'm going to defend Sean Hannity on this. And is it partly dependent on the person? Yes, in this case it is. The person making the allegations is one Debbie Schlussel. We have dealt with her in the past, and I'm going to show you a video of her in a second that you will greatly enjoy. And we nearly ended her career. I don't think she had much one to begin with, to give you context. And she's also deeply conservative. She's more of a lunatic conservative than Sean Hannity is, to give you further context. And really, when we bring up the allegations from this person, and we tell you that it matters who it comes from, all we're talking about is context. So in the case of Ailes and O'Reilly, there were a great number of allegations verified by others. That's why Fox News paid those out. And Fox News has not done anything of the sort here, and they are defending Hannity. And I think that when you look at the full context of it, you'll also agree, certainly by then, given what's happened later today, that perhaps Hannity is right on this one. So first off, Schlussel, or as we used to say, Schwang, Wang, Wang, Debbie Schlussel, went on the radio recently and said about Hannity, he had some event at a bookstore where he signed his book for people standing in line. He asked me to come meet him at this book signing, so I met him there, and it was very awkward. He had me stand up there with him while he signed books, and I felt very weird. These people don't know me, and they didn't come for me to sign their books. Well, that's a rare true thing that Debbie Schlussel said. Anyway, so then I left to get ready for the show, and he said, why don't you come back with me to my hotel? And I said, no, I have to get ready for the show. Now, already in these allegations, That is enormously unclear. You can't, hey, come back to the hotel with me. If that's true, well, hotel or hotel room? If you don't clarify, it could be a giant difference there. Okay. Well, in a Monday interview, Schlussel clarified her remarks, saying that she didn't consider his contact sexual harassment, but still considered him, quote, creepy. Then why are you saying this stuff? Okay, all right. Hannity has a theory on that, and again, I might agree. I want to come back to that Monday interview because it turns out to be enormously important. Okay. Schlussel described another alleged incident of Hannity propositioning her after one of his programs, which she says she turned down. So those things are sometimes part of a pattern, and then it becomes clear. Sometimes they're standalone, and it might be that the misunderstanding is on the other side. And so, look, whether it was University of Virginia case or so many other cases, what we tell you is, look, you got to look at the full context, and that doesn't mean that every allegation is true, but most allegations are true. So, just grain of salt. That's why we have trials, etc. Take it. And try to understand it a little bit better. And in some cases, it might simply be a misunderstanding. In some cases, it stretches the imagination to say that dozens of women had the same misunderstanding, as you said, one over the top thing or another. But in this case, it's one woman with, can I come back? Can you want to come back to my hotel? And she interprets it as, of course, he's coming on to me. Maybe, of course, maybe not. Schlussel said after that, I wasn't booked on a show again, and he called me and yelled at me. I got a very weird feeling about the whole thing, and I kind of knew I wouldn't be back on a show. Or you weren't back on a show because you're even crazy by conservative standards. And there's a completely different explanation for this. Now, you might be wondering, what do I have against her? I got no dog in that fight in that she's almost an entirely irrelevant right-wing commentator. I didn't even know she was still trying to be in media. I thought she would have been embarrassed enough to leave media by now. So I'm going to show you an old video of hers that we had some fun with back in the day to give you a sense of her star power in the media. And then you might see why Hannity might not have had her on again. Now, you love the pronunciation. You love everything about this. But also note, towards the end of the video, the dubbing she did, because she clearly got a fact wrong. Watch.
I'm Debbie Schlussel for Debbie Does Politics. So, the queen of daytime talk has endorsed B.O. No, not the smelly B.O., but the presidential B.O. That's right, Oprah Winfrey endorsed Barack Obama, as you've probably heard. And I have a problem with that. It's not so much because I don't agree with Barack Obama's views. I don't agree with them. But I also don't agree with letting a woman who's the most influential person in America use all of her media acumen and all of her media outlets, her magazine, her TV show, her seminars, everything else to push a presidential candidate. While we're all regulated to a lousy $2,300 per presidential candidate. Sure, I can't really afford to pay $2,300 to any presidential candidate of my choice.
I love the dubbing. Ignore what I said earlier. I meant $2,300. No, not the smelly B.O., Barack Obama. Okay. I'm pretty sure Debbie Schlussel ended her own media career. Okay. So she's got some credibility issues. Sean Hannity comes out over the top here. And if she's like, by the way, despite all this, she might be telling the truth. You got to be fair and open-minded. I'm just telling you from my vantage point, I'm a little skeptical looking at the facts that we have now. And you'll see that that's justified based on what she said today. Anyway, Hannity comes out strong, says, let me be clear. The comments about me on a radio show this week by this individual are 100% false and a complete fabrication. This individual is a serial harasser who has been lying about me for well over a decade. The individual has a history of making provably false statements against me in an effort to slander, smear, and besmirch my reputation. So, you know me, I'm not a fan of Sean Hannity. I don't agree with any of his political views. Somebody accused me falsely, I'd be pretty mad too, if that's the case. Now, he's considering suing her for all the defamatory statements he claims she's made. She's now threatening to countersue him because her reputation has been hurt, whatever there is of it. Fox News backing Sean Hannity completely, saying this is not the first time Debbie Schlussel has lied about Sean Hannity. Now, look, Fox News also not a well-known reservoir of veracity. Having said that, they settled a lot of the other cases. And in this case, they're like, no, I don't think so. Schwang, wang, wang, Debbie Schlussel. So then Schlussel does an interview with Law News today. She says, I would never accuse him of that, referring to sexual harassment. Sexual harassment has a special meaning under the law, and I would never accuse him of that. Now, wait a minute, though. Okay, so all this is apparently all about nothing, okay? But second of all, why did you bring it up then? Why do you say, hey, look, I thought he invited me back to his hotel, and then I never got to be on the show again? That is a very clear implication. Well, don't make that implication if you think he didn't sexually harass you. If you think he did, then by all means pursue it. She says, by the way, Schlussel later clarified that it wasn't his hotel room, but rather his hotel. Okay, now further clarifications. He was probably nice enough, and I know it sounds funny saying that about Sean Hannity, but if people who meet him say he's very nice. You know, we could disagree with him and he could be very unnice in policy, but could be a decent person in person. I don't know. I've never met the guy. But it could have been that he was actually nice to you when he shouldn't have been, saying, oh yeah, you're gonna be on the show if you wanna get drinks or something. All right. She told LawNews.com that she did go on the show following the incident, but after that was banned from Fox News. You don't know that, okay? And then she once again clarifies, I never thought I was sexually harassed by Sean Hannity. I thought he was weird and creepy, not someone I liked. My guess is that the feeling is now mutual. Okay, so look, guys, some of you might take this the wrong way and think, oh, don't attack this accuser of Sean Hannity, who's a bad guy and all this. Look at the culture at Fox News. And I don't know what Sean Hannity has done or not done. I do know the culture at Fox News. But I'm just telling you that knowing what we know about Debbie Schlussel in public, right? And knowing the context of this, this doesn't seem like one of the more credible allegations against Fox News. We're trying to be as impartial as we can here. I got no love for Sean Hannity, but from our perspective, this doesn't look exactly fair. Okay, so we move on from Schwang, Wang, Wang, Debbie Schlussel. Oh, by the way, fun little poll, somewhat unrelated to this, so you know what? I'll save this for the second hour. How about that? Because we have more Fox News coming up that I could talk to you guys about at that time. All right, let's go to the next story. Now, Donald Trump is prone to reminding us how intelligent he is. Here are two separate clips where he has said that on different occasions.
And then they say, "Is Donald Trump an intellectual? Trust me, I'm like a smart person." And I don't have to be told, you know, I'm like a smart person. I don't have to be told the same thing and the same words every single day. I don't need that.
It turns out he actually does, and I'm not positive he knows what the word smart means. So in an Associated Press interview, when talking about his interactions with the German leader Angela Merkel, he says, yeah, it's funny. One of the best chemistries I had was with German Chancellor Angela Merkel. Really? In fact, the Associated Press's next question literally is, really? Okay, as you're gonna see, that was not the perception of the Germans. He went on to say later to the Associated Press about the same incident, we had unbelievable chemistry, and people have given me credit for having great chemistry with all the leaders. Really, who's giving you that credit? All right, so what actually happened with Angela Merkel in that meeting? A senior German official tells the Times of London, 10 times Trump asked Merkel if he could negotiate a trade deal with Germany. Every time she replies, you can't do a trade deal with Germany, only the EU. So Germany is in the European Union, and Trump keeps asking, hey, can I just do a trade deal with you, with Germany? She's like, no, you do it through the European Union because we're part of the European Union. Okay, but can I do one with you? 10 times, no, wrong, 11 times. Listen, on the 11th refusal, Trump finally got the message, we'll do a deal with Europe then. Merkel reportedly told her cabinet members that Trump had a very basic misunderstandings on the fundamentals of the EU and trade. On the other hand,
and then they say, "There's Donald Trump, an intellectual. Trust me, I'm like a smart person, and I don't have to be told, you know, I'm like a smart person. I don't have to be told the same thing and the same words every single day. I don't need that."
Except apparently the German chancellor had to tell you 11 times how the European Union works. Look, if you're not embarrassed that you voted for Donald Trump, I don't think I can help you. I mean, really, you're proud? You're proud, like, huh? My president, the guy I voted for, made the most powerful man on earth, has no idea what the European Union is or how it works. What, huh? Can I do a trade deal with you? How about with you? How about with Germany? How about with you? How about with Deutschland? Nine, you can't do any of that. Oh, I don't know. I'll ask 11 times. Moron of morons. I'm gonna go back to this poll, because it's a good one, it's a doozy. Over 16,000 people have already voted on this. Who is dumber, George Bush or Donald Trump? Now look, don't forget Bush. Here's a Bush classic.
There's an old saying in Tennessee, I know it's in Texas, probably in Tennessee, that says, "Fool me once, shame on you. If fool me, we can't get fooled again."
I mean, how could anyone be dumber than George Bush? But I think Trump's on his way, man. I mean, I think that Bush would have gotten the message after asking 7 times, as opposed to 11 times. TYTnetwork.com/dumb to vote in that poll. Jesus Christ, man. Just learn this much about government or world affairs before you become president of the United States of America. And I think Bush would have known that, hey, it's kind of embarrassing that I don't know how the European Union works. He would have been one of those guys who's not very bright, but knows he's not bright. So covers up with, "Oh yeah, of course, I know who I do the trade deal with. I mean, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me, can't get fooled again," right? Whereas Trump's like, what, how do I do this deal? Okay, you're from Germany. How do I make a trade deal? Oh, he doesn't even know how stupid that sounds. TYTnetwork.com/dumb, but this is beginning to be a landslide. He's making Bush look like a smart person. Okay. Now, we move on to the French election results. So staying in Europe though, okay. So we had elections in France, very interesting results. I think that they have global implications, not just because of who's going to lead France, but because of how the voters voted in particular. I think it backs up exactly what I've been saying about elections that have happened all across the world, including England, UK obviously, and the United States. So, as the New York Times explains, in France's most consequential election in recent history, voters on Sunday chose Emmanuel Macron and Marine Le Pen to go to a runoff to determine the next president. Official returns showed. One is a political novice, the other a far-right firebrand, both outsiders but with starkly different visions for the country. First, let me show you those results. There was 4 candidates who were very close to one another. The top 2 advanced to the runoff, and of course that was Macron and Le Pen in this case. Fillon came in at 19.9, Jean-Luc Mélenchon came in at 19.6, but the top 2 at 23.9, 21.4 advance. New York Times explains that it is a full-throated rebuke of France's traditional mainstream parties, because they're not in those parties. So this goes to my point. With Brexit, I said the great unraveling has begun. That's it, for better or for worse, the people all across the world are saying we've had enough. And we're not gonna go with the establishment way of thinking. We've been told for decade after decade now it is in our best interests, and we now don't believe you. On a mass scale, we don't believe you. We'll be voting against the establishment for as far as the eye can see. And I thought that might be foreboding for what's happening in the US elections, and of course Donald Trump won, another giant brick through the establishment window, let alone events that happened earlier in Greece and the Philippines and so many other countries where again the establishment has been rejected, also Eastern Europe. And again, more context here from the Times. It is the first time in the nearly 59-year history of France's Fifth Republic that both of the final candidates are from outside of the traditional left-right party structure. Buckle up, this is going to keep on happening. So, and this is an excellent case of where at least the voters were presented with an option on the left that was not mainstream. Now, we saw here in America what happens if you have the right wing with a populist option, a non-establishment option, and the left wing goes, no, status quo is awesome, we're going with an establishment option. No matter how hideous the right wing version of populism is, it wins. Now, if you had a populist non-establishment candidate on the left, it is entirely possible that, as in France, that option could have won easily. In fact, right now, we know that the most popular politician in the United States of America is that populist non-establishment politician named Bernie Sanders. So if you don't give him that option, though, you get right-wing win after right-wing win. In this case, how do they play out? How does this play out? Well, Le Pen's success was a victory for people who oppose the European Union and for those who want to see more France first policies. Where have I seen that before? To restrict immigration, protect French industry, and limit public signs of Muslim faith, including the wearing of headscarves. Where have I seen that? So, but in this case, again, you have Marcon, who is an option that is on the left and non-establishment. So his success also suggests, as the New York Times explains, that despite multiple terrorist attacks in France recently, a message of outreach to immigrants and acceptance of Muslims, as well as of ethnic diversity, has some currency. So who's going to win in the general election now that they go to that runoff between these two? Well, here's the latest polling on it. And as you can see, Macron, the left-wing option, has a huge lead, 63.8 to 36.2. So you can argue about how left-wing Macron is, but the traditional parties gone, not interested. Establishment, now it is the UK, France, and the US saying not interested. And but again, if you have a left-wing option, they are apparently very willing to take it. So Democrats, are you listening here in America? My guess is no way. They will stick with their corporate agenda because they get paid to stick with that corporate agenda. They will learn no lessons from our election, French elections, or any other elections. Right now, the Democrats are more unpopular in America than Republicans are, which is astounding given that the Republican president is Donald Trump. But the establishment doesn't want to learn and doesn't want to hear that the American people and the French people and people all across the world don't want the establishment. They will do anything in their power to avoid hearing that and reacting to it, because that message is aimed directly at them. Well, whether they want to hear it or not, it is real and it is here. Okay, now I move to the effect of that here in America. All right. Well, congratulations, Donald Trump. You are the most unpopular president in polling history in your first 100 days. During the Associated Press interview that he did on Friday, he kept saying, that's an artificial barrier that they put in there. First of all, it's not a barrier. That has nothing to do with a barrier. Second of all, you're the one who put forward a 100-day plan telling us how relevant your first 100 days are. Okay. Now, but if you're Trump, hold. This poll has, yes, disastrous results for you. But it also has some good news for you and very bad news for your opposition. So first off, the bad news, 53% disapprove of Donald Trump, 42% approve. Terrible, terrible numbers. Presidents are historically the most popular in their first 100 days. In fact, I'll give you a comparison. Barack Obama, who Trump and the Republicans told us was very unpopular, not accurate. In his first 100 days, he had a 69% approval rating and only 26% disapproving. That is an enormous 27-point lead on Donald Trump. But if you say, okay, well, fine, Obama was unbelievably popular. No, most presidents in their first 100 days, they just got elected and they get goodwill and the American people are understanding and hopeful, do really well. In fact, here, let me give you the average of all the presidents who were polled in their first 100 days. 69% approval, 19% disapproval. Trump nowhere near those numbers. Instead, he's underwater at 42-53. Okay, so as ABC News and Washington Post explained, he approaches his 100th day in office with the lowest approval rating at this point of any other president in polls since 1945. Oops, not good news there. The only person who even comes close, but even doesn't match him, is Gerald Ford. And that is because he had pardoned Richard Nixon within his first 100 days. And that was deeply, deeply unpopular. And Gerald Ford still did 6 points better than Donald Trump. Okay, so more bad news for Trump. Majority say Trump lacks the judgment and the temperament it takes to serve effectively. 6 in 10 doubt his honesty and trustworthiness. See him as out of touch and don't think he understands the problems of people like them. 56% say he hasn't accomplished much in his first 100 days. And 55% say he doesn't follow a consistent set of principles in setting policy. And that's not the half of it. So lots of bad numbers. There are a couple of decent numbers. They're a little split on whether he has violated his campaign pledges yet. I think that number will get progressively worse for him as he has basically done everything to rebuild the swamp and build it bigger and swampier than ever. So I think even his good numbers will, or mediocre numbers will start to go down for him. He brags about how he, 53% still think I'm strong, and it's not a bad number. And you know, it's one of the few that he has to hang on to, and it is one of his strengths. I actually would concede some of that. But again, for the context, he's at 53. Obama was at 77% for strength in his first 100 days. Okay, now over back to good news for Donald Trump. Among those who report having voted for him in November, 96% today say it was the right thing to do. A mere 2% regret it. Wow. So despite all the bumbling, fumbling, the ridiculous statements, the failures in policy, having achieved almost nothing legislatively in his first 100 days, not having delivered on any of his promises, the wall, the travel ban, you name it. Still, only 2% of his supporters have backed away. The rest are like, yeah, rock and roll, that's my guy. Well, that's at a minimum a little bit depressing because it shows that at least some of those people are impervious to facts. Now, on the other hand, you know, he's done the travel ban, it got knocked down, but it was as bigoted as advertised. So some of the people who voted for him think, good, there you go, go get him, big guy, do the third travel ban, do whatever you got to do. I understand that. And for all of his faults, at least he brags about himself. I know it's kind of a funny compliment to give him, right? But Obama would have these massive accomplishments, added millions upon millions of jobs. And you almost never heard about it. With Trump, he adds like 70 jobs somewhere and he's like, I'm the greatest job creator ever. I'm the best. I'm the best. All I do is do job creation. I do so much job creation, it'll make your head spin. Well, that's all his followers need. It's good enough to you know, to hang their hopes on. So it's also possible, and I think very likely, that those good folks and some bad folks have not gotten all the facts yet on Donald Trump. And look, the thing is, it's not me saying, oh yeah, once you know you find out we're right about policy. No, you'll see, you'll see. He'll either create jobs or he won't. He'll either get us into international messes or he won't, and then he won't be able to hide it. 100 days is almost nothing. So he says that about what things he hasn't accomplished. I say it about his incompetence. You think he's been incompetent so far? You ain't seen nothing yet. Give him some time, and I think disaster is straight ahead for him. But he's not the only one. The Democratic Party in even worse shape. Wow. 67% say the Democratic Party is out of touch with the concerns of most Americans. Even more than say the same about Trump and similar to the number for Republican Party, 62%. The Democratic Party is considered more out of touch than the Republican Party. What a miserable failure the Democratic Party is. If the Democratic Party was what it used to be, actually stand up for the average citizens, stand up for workers in America, stand up for progressive policies. And by the way, progressive policies that are right now incredibly popular in the country. Well, then they would have a much, much better standing than they do today. Instead, I think somewhat rightfully, the American people are thinking, well, the Democratic Party is the establishment. We've got to take over the Democratic Party. These guys are absolutely hopeless. If you don't go in a progressive direction and you let these same Democrats keep going in a corporate direction, they could lose to Trump next time. In fact, I have depressing news on that in just 1 second. But let me finish the Democrats. ABC News and Washington Post explain, that's a steeply negative turn for the Democrats. 19 percentage points more critical than when last asked just 3 years ago, including especially steep losses in their base. Because the base is waking up and going, yeah, you're not serving me, you're serving your donors. So I've had enough of it. I've had enough of it. So now, what would happen if the election were held today? It's not, you'd have ads before it, yada yada. Of course, it's an imperfect question. But nonetheless, the answers are interesting and at a minimum, somewhat informative. So they explain, while Trump would retain almost all of his support if the election were held again today, 96%, fewer of Clinton's supporters said they'd stick with her at 85%, producing a 40 to 43% Clinton-Trump result in a hypothetical redo among self-reported 2016 voters. You understand that's Hillary Clinton 40, Donald Trump 43. If we had an election today, he would do better than he did in the election. He has gained points on her. He has gained popularity on her. So of course he rushed out and tweeted, would still beat Hillary in popular vote. No, no, you never beat her in the first place. She beat you by 2.8 million votes in the popular vote. You won the Electoral College. In an Associated Press interview, who's like, huh, Electoral College definitely favors the Democrats. Really? Is that why we've had two elections in just 16 years where the Democrats won the popular vote, but they lost the Electoral College? Boy, that's got a weird way of favoring the Democrats. Again, he's not attached to reality. But the other folks that are not attached to reality, and more important in this case, is the Democratic Party. They're just not that into you. Corporate Democrats, the voters are just not that into you. They get it, they get it. You take the corporate money and you represent those guys. If you don't turn around immediately, you're going to lose again to this buffoon. You're going to lose again to the Republicans. To be more unpopular than the Republicans now and more out of touch than the Republican Party now is so abysmal. You hardly have words for it. It's embarrassing. And you ask the mainstream media, they're like, oh no, no, the Democratic incumbents are pragmatic winners. Progressives are not pragmatic, they don't know how to win. This is what you call winning? They lost to Donald Trump, would lose worse to him today. They lost the House, they lost the Senate, they lost the Supreme Court, they lost 69 out of 99 state legislatures. And they're more unpopular than the Republicans. And almost everybody in the establishment press says, oh no, no, the Democratic incumbents are so pragmatic, they know how to win, whereas progressives don't. Preposterous. JusticeDemocrats.com. Go join the progressive wing that doesn't take corporate or PAC money. And show these guys how to really run elections and how to beat the Republicans and how to beat people like Donald Trump, who is the worst, literally the most unpopular president since 1945, according to the polling in the first 100 days, and they still can't beat him. The Democratic Party is in shambles. We've got to immediately take it over and head it in the right direction. Not because we're idealistic and don't know how to win, but because we actually do want to win. And the way to win is not what the Democrats are doing today, but to be fighting much harder, much stronger, and much more progressive. That leads to more victories, not less victories. These are the facts, Young Turks. All right, back on the Young Turks, a couple of tweets for you guys. Well, Jamal says, bring back hashtag loser Donald. Don't worry, it's coming. Johnny Grateful says, no one hired Trump for his intelligence. They voted him. They voted him in to keep Hillary out. And I think he wrote that before we gave you the news on how much Hillary Clinton and the Democratic Party are unpopular. You're absolutely right about that, unfortunately. Okay, tyrtnetwork.com/go. Journalism drive. Less than a week left. It is in fact panic time. So we got to go. You're going to decide whether we're hiring one, two, or maybe even zero reporters. Based on how much money we raised, $27 from James in Texas, $50 from Lewis in New Mexico, and $127 from Patrick in Massachusetts. Thank you guys for donating. Can I see where we are now? 1711. Okay, we're very close to 1750. Let's make that happen, and that'll get you one extra reporter that we're going to hire. 2 million gets you two reporters. Let's do it, guys. Less than a week, man. We got to go right now. And if you give the 127, by the way. You get that House TYT t-shirt as well. You get the whole soundboard, including the idiot Bush quotes and the idiot Trump quotes. If you donate $270, you get it on a thumbnail. By the way, I'm doing a rally in Washington, D.C. We're also going to the climate rally. You got to sign up in order to get those updates. Okay, tytnetwork.com/resistance. And there it is. Or you could text TYT to 228466. I'm going to let you know where we're gathering for the climate rally on Saturday. And I'm going to tell you in a little bit and through the text, most importantly, where and when that speech I'm giving on Sunday is. So definitely stay tuned for that. I'm going to talk about what is the actual resistance. All right, now let's go to some of the great reporting done by our reporters that you guys helped to hire. Michael Tracy, one of the investigative reporters that the Young Turks has hired, went to Dianne Feinstein town hall here in California. She's of course senator from California. Now a lot of people are going to the Republican town halls and seeing people yell. But we should be fair and actually go to both Republican and Democratic ones and see what the reaction is. And when Michael went, we found a very interesting reaction to one particular issue, which is Medicare for All. Now look at her constituents' reaction and her reaction to them on this topic. Watch.
Will you co-sponsor Senator Bernie Sanders' Medicare for All bill?
Not at this stage, and I will tell you why. I will tell you why. Essentially, as I understand what Bernie is proposing, it is a takeover of all medicine in the United States, and I don't favor that. What I favor is taking a couple of problems in the Obama bill and working those out. And this has to do with the individual market, which is highly problematic. Well,
okay, I've got
I understand if you want to stay after this.
Oh boy, okay, that is a horrible answer in several different ways. First of all, she says, I don't support Bernie's bill at this stage. No, based on the rest of your answer, it appears that you don't support it at all. You said it's a takeover of all medicine and I don't support it. So what stage would you support a takeover of all medicine in your words? No stage. So just be honest about it. Second of all, is Medicare for All a takeover of all medicine? Of course not. It's Medicare for All. We already have Medicare and Medicare didn't take over all medicine in America. That's preposterous. What it does is it gives you insurance if you're above the age of 65. It doesn't take over the hospitals, it doesn't take over the doctors, it doesn't do any of that. Isn't that amazing? She's a senator from California. God, for the mainstream press, they respect her so much. Like she's pragmatic and knows what she's doing. And she's one of the Brahmins of politics and an elder statesman. She doesn't know what Medicare for All is at all, at all. She's like, you can tell she didn't bother to look into it. It says Medicare for All. How could you possibly think that Medicare is taking over all of medicine? You see that? These guys are never going to vote for it. No, it's not that the Democratic Party has a better, more pragmatic solution than Bernie Sanders or the progressive movement. Oh, guys, you don't understand. We have to go inch by inch. And every once in a while, we have to lose an election to Donald Trump and then get set back miles and miles. And then start inching back until we get Medicare for All or single payer. No, they have no intention of ever getting to that conclusion. Like, well, Obamacare, you know, it's better. It's better. Okay, I think it's a lot better than it used to be. I think it's better than the Republican proposal. And her idea is, well, let's just tweak it. Let's just tweak it a little bit. I mean, it has no public option, so you don't have a choice. You have to, and in fact, you're mandated to buy from private insurance, which then has no cost controls. Then the private health insurance, the middlemen that take all that profit in the middle, can keep on jacking up the rates for you. But she just wants to tweak it. She doesn't want to change that system at all. They have no intention of ever serving their voters. And for you in the mainstream press, if you're not getting it, the resistance is not just about resistance to Trump. Did you see that town hall? Those weren't Republicans. Those are Democrats booing your beloved Dianne Feinstein because they don't agree with her. Look, when I see people like Dianne Feinstein, I see the past, I see ghosts. She's gone. They're not going to survive any of this. The old days when you would lie to your voters over and over, and your friends on Morning Joe would support you, and there were, all the Washington press would bow down and go, oh yes, of course, you're very pragmatic in the way that you have lost to the Republicans over and over again, your Democrat loser Democratic Party. The fact that you've lost to Donald Trump and the House and the Senate and the Supreme Court and 69 out of 99 state legislatures, you're so pragmatic, you know how to win. And the right way to do things is to make sure your corporate donors are happy while pretending to get to a progressive policy point that you actually never ever want to get to. I don't know if you know this or if you've recognized it, but we're on to you. And we're not the only ones on to you. The entire internet is on to you, and your voters are on to you. Look at that town hall there. JusticeDemocrats.com. In fact, they have a petition on this particular issue. JusticeDemocrats.com/single-payer. Sign them, tell them that you're for Medicare for all. Get it up to 1 million signatures and then shove it down their throats so until they begin to understand it. And don't pay lip service to Bernie Sanders or to progressive voters if you don't actually intend on doing anything that is actually progressive policy positions. Corporate Democrats, they're never ever going to learn because they're not paid to learn. They're paid to do exactly what their donors want them to do. They think that they're still in charge. Dianne Feinstein, we'll see you at the polls. Oh no, you can't primary incumbents. Why not? Why should California, which is deeply progressive, have this ancient conservative dinosaur who's been serving her donors for decades represent you when she doesn't even agree with you and when she has no intention of ever bringing you change? She just told you right to your face on that. Goner. They're all goners. They don't even know it. Yeah, okay, keep staying smug and think that you got this thing figured out. You don't have anything figured out. All right, let me go to Flint real quick. So, in Flint, Michigan, they're going to do a town hall where the mayor is going to explain what they're going to do about the poisoned water, except that they hold it on a church. Now, there was some local press there. We were the only national outlet that sent cameras. We got footage for that we want to show to you guys because there were arrests there. And I think arrests that were absolutely outrageous, as you'll see for yourself in a second. First of all, let me give you a description of what happened. Six people were arrested Thursday in Flint in a disturbance that erupted after police stopped men who hadn't removed their hats and denied their entrance to a church sanctuary where a town hall meeting on whether the city should begin drawing water again from the Flint River. Wait a minute, why are you having it in a church if you've got this weird rules about how you can't have your hat in a church, and you're going to arrest people over that? While they're worried about the poison that's in the water that's affecting their kids and their families? Okay, insanity, but it gets worse. Some people who were cussing in the church during the emotionally raw town hall meeting were also escorted out of the House of Prayer Missionary Baptist Church by police, according to media reports. Actually, let me go to video two here, because Jordan Chariton, a TRT investigative reporter, was there, and he recorded the police chief, Tim Johnson, saying this.
Church, please remove your hats. If you don't know, the ladies is okay to wear their hats in the church.
All right, I don't know why that sped up, guys. Can we try that again?
Church, please remove your hats. If you don't know, the ladies is okay to wear their hats in the church, but gentlemen cannot wear their hats in the church, so please remove them. Please don't be in there trying to disrupt this meeting, because if you do, I'm going to escort you out, and I'm only going to take you to the back door, and then you're going to jail. I'm not going to play with nobody tonight. That's just how it's going to be.
What do you mean you're not going to play with anybody tonight? What does that mean? Okay, you're a tough guy. But this is a town hall where they came to express their opinions. So if you say, all right, if you express your opinions, or God forbid, literally in this case, that you should have a hat on at a town hall event, then I'm not going to play with you. I'm going to arrest you for having a hat on in a town hall? Okay. And he followed through on that. Tim Johnson later said, there's a couple people that's arrested. There's a couple people cussing in the church, disorderly conduct. So a town hall event. So then almost every town hall, you could have people arrested. if they're too loud, if they were cussing, oh my, ooh, I do declare, right? Or if they have their hats on. Why'd you have it in a church? Maybe the whole point of having it in a church was to have an excuse to arrest anyone who dared to raise their voice against the government. And Johnson says, I guess they felt like they can do it anyway. That's what they're here for, is to be agitators. It's a town hall. They're there to, yes, agitate the government by asking them and holding them accountable. That's what the whole point of a government town hall is. Like, somehow they came in to do what? Like, oh, I got it. We'll go to the Flint town hall. We'll pretend we're worried about our poison families and the poison that's in the water. But in fact, we'll agitate with our hats. We'll put hats on and that'll get them. That's what you really think, Tim Johnson? Oh my God. All right, now let's begin to show you some of the arrests that happened.
Then do what you're going to do.
Come on, if you resist, and if you
resist, don't push on me. I'm leaving.
You and your wife.
I got to get my car.
I'll get it for you. We get your friends.
I knew you was coming. I'll get a hold of you.
All right, quick as
well.
This is that way.
I'm handicapped.
Walk around this way.
She's handicapped.
Somebody walk around.
Which way you want? You know what? Go do your job now. You're doing good here.
That's important. Now just get
do what you do best. Go stand up there and
ask the people. Here we go!
So we looked into why you can be charged with disorderly conduct in Michigan. Doesn't say anything about hats, doesn't say anything about being too loud. It says it's got a broad range of quote unquote undesirable behavior, including failing to support your family. It would appear to be the exact opposite there. It could be for prostitution, I don't think so. Peeping Tom, I don't think so. Illegal gambling, I don't think so. Nudity or sexual acts, it has nothing to do with hats or being too loud or slightly annoying the police that pretty much set a trap for you so that they could arrest you if you complained about what was happening in your government. Interesting, more arrests.
Watch my cuffs, grab my keys, I gotta secure my car now.
Hold on.
Oh, there's the keys.
Where
the
keys.
Do you wanna give the keys to?
I'll take them.
Okay, you're in the front seat.
Well, you're under arrest, sir.
All right, appreciate it.
Okay.
And I'll see you in court.
Yes, sir.
Johnny, it's not personal.
Yeah, it is.
We got a job.
It is
now. All right, have a seat.
How do you guys feel arresting people for that?
Just leave him alone. Leave him alone. We're where we need
to
be.
Come here.
Rob, grab her purse.
Come here, please.
I give me what you want to give me.
This is Tony's stuff.
This is Tony's.
Okay, we'll make sure.
And wait, sir.
No,
you're hurting me.
You're not going to dig in pockets when you're being arrested.
Out of my pocket.
We'll. No. You get away.
Get away.
Okay.
You're going to be arrested for interference.
I'm sorry. Here.
So six people were arrested in all. We understand that some have been charged with felonies. One of the possible charges here, and we're continuing to press the local authorities on exactly what those are, is resisting arrest. If you don't immediately bow your head to the authorities, resisting arrest. I mean, did that woman look like, I don't know if she's the one who's charged. Did any of these people look like, okay, my God, we're in a hostile situation and those cops' lives are in danger? Right? God, it could have. Look, when you start arresting people for no damn reason at all, when they are justifiably angry about what their government is doing, you open up a can of worms. What if someone actually did resist significantly violently? Well, then you got to escalate. Oh, no. And then what are you doing? Why have you escalated in this way? This is preposterous. You know that for the misdemeanors, they get 90 days in jail or $500 fine or both. If you participate or refuse to disperse from inciting a riot, and so far no riot charges, that's a felony that can give you 10 years in prison. I don't know what they're going to charge him for resisting arrest. These are people who are coming to do the most American thing you could do, which is protest your government. One more arrest here.
Not going to arrest you.
I'm not no kid, okay? I never said and I didn't disrespect you.
So apparently there's a new charge, just everybody be aware, in Michigan, disrespecting the church. You heard it right there. That's a crime. That's a crime, disrespecting the church, cussing at the church. That's a crime. Well, then don't hold a town hall at the church. In fact, Jordan Cheriton, who's the investigative reporter that got all that video for you guys that attended that event, he did his own town hall before. It sparked a whole sit-in that's happening right now in Flint, Michigan. He looked into it further. Actually, you can't do this and have the church and state intermingle and have at a town hall put in these kind of restrictions. That's actually illegal. That's wrong. You can't put what? Okay, can you imagine? Okay, I'm going to do a town hall in a mosque. So that means you can't violate any of the tenets of Islam, otherwise you'll be arrested. How insane would that be? It's equally insane if you hold a government town hall inside a church and start arresting people for disrespecting the church. Preposterous. Look, these are average Americans that are just literally sick of this. Here, one last, afterwards, Jordan caught up with them as well. One last video to show you guys about that.
So we knew there's other stuff in this water, and we still do. Now they're talking bacteria that we talked about 2 years ago. She has not stopped breathing funky since August, and it comes on you and it leaves you, and it comes on you and it leaves you. Right now, I got to apologize, but I'm tired, man. It's been a long ass. We're done. You know what I'm saying? My own mayor that we fought to get in has totally, totally disenfranchised her residents.
That right there, unfortunately, is America, man. We are tired and we are sick. In this case, literally. And when you go to complain about it, they lay this ambush for you and then arrest you and your family members. It's grotesque. All the videos are up on youtube.com/TYTpolitics. Watch them all, judge for yourself. But this is not what America is supposed to be. All right, when we come back, a story about WikiLeaks. That is both preposterous, you'll laugh at what Trump said, but also deeply frightening for its implications for all journalists when we return. All right, back on the Young Turks. Here's some new donors to TYTnetwork.com/go. $27 from Thomas in Florida, $27 from Heidi in Vermont, and $27 from Cameron in Oregon. Love all you guys. Super chat on YouTube, Trevel Stith says, first time donating, thanks for being a major voice. Thank you, Travell. We appreciate it. Now, here's some tweets for you guys at hashtag TYT Live. A Democrat, this is Trey J. He says, a Democratic senator from California doesn't support health care as a right because it would mean a government takeover. Unbelievable. Trey, you're very right about that. I forgot to mention that. I meant to do it in the story. I mean, that's a Republican talking point 101, government takeover of health care. Piss off. Jeffrey McNamee. Sorry, Jeffrey. Anyway, he had a very nice thing to say, I think. Jenk for Feinstein seat. I'm not going to do that. We're doing this. But let me make an outrageous comment. I would beat her, and very easily. If the rest of the press would be like, oh, I do declare a ruffian like you against our esteemed Dianne Feinstein. Somebody's going to kick the living crap out of the esteemed Dianne Feinstein in her next primary. So, and I will very likely back that person. I'll tell you that right now. Okay, Rommel J. Guzman says, politicians in the United States can no longer hide behind the corporate media thanks to the internet. Exactly, Rommel. It's partly why they're trying to shut it down. Rain Moran finally says, the irony of all this, referring to what happened in Flint with the church, is that Jesus literally turned over a table in a church and these cops would have arrested him too in his name. Oh, that's such a good point. Oh, you got Rain, you got a t-shirt, brother. That is an awesome point. I love you guys, man. Smartest audience in the world. One, we can prove that and actually how well educated you guys are based on research we have. Second of all, story after story, you guys make these brilliant points that I wish I had made in the middle of the story. Thank you. All right. So now let's go forward. Let's go to WikiLeaks. Here's a story about WikiLeaks that has some very important ramifications, very serious, and also will have a preposterous and hilarious quote from Donald Trump. First, the serious stuff. Think Progress reports potential charges against Assange and other members of WikiLeaks could include conspiracy, theft of government property, and charges under the Espionage Act. Here we go again. So this is being reported by the Washington Post at the end of last week that the government, including the Justice Department, of course, considering charges against WikiLeaks. Now, that has implications for all the press because WikiLeaks didn't take any of the documents, they published them. Now, by the way, the Washington Post also published some of those documents. But a lot of the concern is about, well, this could affect the mainstream media too. It could also affect the non-mainstream media like WikiLeaks. I like how most of the press is like, well, I mean, WikiLeaks, who cares if they go to jail? But wait a minute, it could affect me. Yes, it could affect all of the media. So Jeffrey Pyle is an attorney whose expertise is in the First Amendment and these media organizations. He says, if this is true, this could be a very, very grave threat to the practice of news reporting generally. Now, if you can't publish anything your source have given you, and cultivating sources becomes a crime, well, you've killed the First Amendment. You killed the freedom of the press. And you did it by saying, well, WikiLeaks is super dangerous, so we had to arrest them. Now, remember, everybody, you publish anything we don't like, we're going to arrest you. We don't have free press anymore if you do that. Look at what Mike Pompeo, the CIA director, is saying about WikiLeaks. WikiLeaks walks like a hostile intelligence service and talks like a hostile intelligence service. Well, couldn't you say the same of other people that publish those documents, The Intercept, Washington Post, and the list goes on? Oh, well, you took these documents that the CIA didn't want you to take. You didn't take them from the CIA, but you published them. Well, I mean, that you were doing your job in the press. Sorry, it walks like a hostile intelligence agency because it took the documents that I didn't want out there and published them. And it talks like a hostile intelligence agency. You're all under arrest. If you can do it to Julian Assange, you could do it to anybody. Finally, one more from Think Progress. While pursuing Espionage Act charges against the State Department, remember this happened under Obama, leaker Stephen Kim in 2011, the Justice Department referred to Fox News reporter James Rosen in a court filing as an aider, abettor, and or co-conspirator. So that was the Obama administration. Remember, they did this Espionage Act. They charged more journalists with the Espionage Act than the rest of all of the American administrations combined. And later, Holder said, oh yeah, that was probably a little overstep what we did with Rosen there, and I regret it a little bit. Well, you opened the door, and not only did you open the door, you ran through the door. You did the most amount of Espionage Act charges. And now Trump goes, oh, thank you very much. I don't like the press anyway. I just called them an enemy of the people. And the Obama administration told me I could charge him with the Espionage Act. Great. Let's start with Assange and see how deep we can go. This is a terrible, disastrous, unconstitutional idea. Now, despite that, we do get to look, it's both funny and gives you insight into what kind of a person Donald Trump is and how he's going to act, and hence serious as well. In an Associated Press interview about this issue, Donald Trump had the temerity to say, quote, never heard of WikiLeaks, never heard of it. When WikiLeaks came out, all I was just saying is, well, look at this information here. This is pretty good stuff. I don't support or unsupport. And he says that he would let Jeff Sessions charge them with a crime, any crime that he thinks is appropriate. Wait, you never heard of WikiLeaks? That's curious, because I remember this.
So today, I guess WikiLeaks, it sounds like, is going to be dropping some more. And
the more emails WikiLeaks releases, the more lines between the Clinton Foundation, the Secretary of State's office, and the Clintons' personal finances, they all get blurred.
Newly public emails, WikiLeaks, this magnitude's worse, in my opinion, and in the opinion of many people in law enforcement, this is worse than Watergate. By the way, did you see another one? Another one came in today. This WikiLeaks is like a treasure trove. Another one came in today. They've got to start talking about WikiLeaks. This just came out. This just came out. WikiLeaks. I love WikiLeaks.
Quote, never heard of WikiLeaks. Never heard of it. I love WikiLeaks. WikiLeaks is a treasure trove. By the way, you're under arrest. You think Donald Trump was going to be on your side? There's only one side Donald Trump's on, and that's his own. The rest of us, watch out. Okay, now let's go more to that same Associated Press interview where he said other absurd things. Okay. Now, Donald Trump talking to the Associated Press really mucks it up here. And he did it so much, and I got so many quotes, I got tired. I got tired of winning, so I'm only going to give you a snippet of it. If you read the whole interview, you're going to be amazed. It'll make your head spin with how stupid he is, how little knowledge he has of anything that's going on in the world. Send this to your conservative friends. They'll be upset at first, but then maybe some percentage of them will actually read the interview and go, "Wow, really? He didn't know that." That is a little troubling. Okay, so first let's start with Elijah Cummings. He's a Democratic congressman that went and talked to Donald Trump. Now, I'm going to defy you, if you're in the right wing, to try to figure out what in the world this word salad is. So here is a direct quote from Donald Trump in that interview about the Cummings meeting. Quote, well, he said, you'll be the greatest president in history of, but you know what? I'll take that also, but that you could be. But he said, we'll be the greatest president, but I would also accept the other. In other words, if you do your job, but I accept that, then I watched him interviewed and it was like he never even was here. It's incredible. I watched him interviewed a week later and it's like he was never in my office. And you can even say that. That almost makes Sarah Palin sound smart. Okay, so then we go to just weird, needless bragging that is would be deeply embarrassing if anyone at work did it. Imagine somebody at work brags like this or at school, etc. He says, I'm rebuilding the military. We have great people. We have great things in place. We have tremendous borders. What does that mean? We have tremendous borders. Do other countries have poor borders? Like, look at their border. Ha! Funny border. Our borders are number one. We have tremendous borders. I know. A lot of right wingers, they don't mind. The president makes no sense, doesn't say things that make sense. Who cares? Who cares? I like him. He's an idiot, but I like him. All right, here's more of this. Our military is so proud. They were not proud at all. They had their heads down. Now they have their heads up. The military have their heads up. It's a thing. I mean, if Obama talked like this, they'd ride him out of town. They'd say, what a buffoon this guy is. Imagine what they would say about him. Okay. Trump then goes on to say that he was a little surprised by how big things are in the government. You think I'm kidding? It's a hyperbole, right? No, not a hyperbole. Here's a quote. Well, the one thing I would say, and I say this to people, I never realized how big it was, referring to the government and the presidency and the White House. Everything's so, and there's a ton of unintelligibles here, okay, throughout the interview, because nobody can tell, even the reporters can't tell, they talk to him, they can't tell what the hell he's saying. Everything's so the borders are, I'm sorry, you know, the orders are so massive. So the AP is of course confused. They're like, what do you mean the orders are so massive and that everything in government is big? That's a surprise. Okay, all right, so he explains. When it came time to, as an example, send out the 59 missiles, the Tomahawks in Syria, I'm saying to myself, you know, this is more than just like 79 missiles. This is death that's involved because people could have been killed. You didn't know that when you drop bombs, people get killed. All right, he says, this is risk that's involved because if the missile goes off and goes in a city or goes in a civilian area, you know, the boats were hundreds of miles away. And if this missile goes off and lands in the middle of a town or a hamlet, every decision is much harder than you'd normally make. This is involving death and life and so many things. You didn't think the presidency would involve life and death decisions? You didn't think dropping bombs involved life and death decisions? You didn't know that missiles could miss? You didn't know it could kill civilians? You know, it's happened hundreds of times already on your watch, bombs dropped by us on your watch, not just when we were bombing Assad, when we're bombing ISIS, when we're bombing in all these different countries. Hundreds of civilians have already died. getting interviewed at the end of last week by Associated Press. He's like, who knew that? Who knew that when you drop bombs, people die? I didn't know that. Man, it's so big here. So big. There's apparently other parts that he found big. The financial cost of everything is so massive. Every agency. This is thousands of times bigger, the United States, than the biggest company in the world. Yes, schmuck. We all know that. Everyone in the country knows that but you. This is so, it's not just embarrassing, guys. He's going to make decisions about war. We're so screwed. One on the decision to go to war or not go to war, whether it's Syria or North Korea or God knows what else. And two, the decisions within that war. Oh my God, the whole world's screwed. Now, then they asked him about his 100-day plan. He put out a 100-day plan. He didn't meet almost anything on that plan. So he says, oh, well, things came up. I'll give you an example. I didn't put Supreme Court judge on the 100-day plan, and I got a Supreme Court judge. Associated Press, I think it's on there. It is. Picking a Supreme Court justice was on his 100-day plan. I didn't put it on there. Oh, I did. What do I know? I didn't write it. Yeah. Nor did he read it. Okay. Now, how is it different than running a business? He says, well, in the business, you don't necessarily need heart. Oh, my God. Whereas here, almost everything affects people. Here, everything, pretty much everything you do in government involves heart. Whereas in business, most things don't involve heart. Come on, guys. You're proud of that? That's the guy. First of all, of course what you do in business affects other human beings. When you employ people, it affects them. When you scam people like you did in Trump University, it affects them. Yes, you also need heart in business. You need heart to exist as a human being. But this schmuck's like, oh, you don't need heart to do business. That's where you crush people. Oh, in the government, I didn't know, man. It turns out you have to kind of care about people. Okay, you think I'm exaggerating about the business part? Here's the next part. AP, what's that switch been like for you, Trump? In fact, in business, you're actually better off without it. Without the heart. That's the kind of guy Donald Trump is. This monster is the most powerful man on earth now. Okay. You're going to do tax cuts, he announced to the Associated Press. He's like, I shouldn't tell you, but I'm going to tell you. I shouldn't tell you, but it's coming out on Wednesday. Okay, all right. So the Associated Press asks, do you have any details on that in terms of rates? Trump, only in terms that it will be a massive tax cut. It'll be bigger, I believe, than any tax cut ever. Maybe the biggest tax cut we've ever had. In other words, he didn't make the plan. He doesn't know what's in the plan. Is it the biggest tax cut ever? What do you mean, maybe? You said it's ready. You're the president. What's the rate? Okay, fine. You want to announce it on Wednesday? No problem. That's not a big deal, right? You can say, hey, I don't want to comment on that. We're going to announce it on Wednesday. So, yeah, but it's going to be big. It might be the biggest ever. I don't know. I don't know what the number is. Because it's not like you think they're going to trust me to make policy? No, the establishment Republicans are running everything. I just care about how much my golf courses and hotels are making. Okay. All right. Then they asked him about the wall. He said, drugs are terrible. The drugs are terrible. But that's okay. Quote, the wall will stop the drugs. Oh, that's it. The wall will stop all the drugs. That's it. It's right there. Okay, great. I'll hold you to that promise. If you're, God help us, running for president 4 years from now, and the wall has not stopped all the drugs, can I then come around and go, hey, you told us the wall would stop the drugs? What a simpleton. What a child. In fact, if this was your child, you'd be embarrassed. Last one, and this is only a third of the interview. Go read it. Every nook and cranny is embarrassing. If I did the whole interview, it'd take the whole hour. All right. So this is about NATO. So they asked me, Wolf Blitzer, asked me about NATO. And I said two things. NATO's obsolete. Not knowing much about NATO, now I know a lot about NATO. NATO's obsolete. And I said, and the reason it's obsolete is because of the fact that they don't focus on terrorism. You know, back when they did NATO, there was no such thing as terrorism. Okay. Yeah, no, when they started NATO, there was terrorism. Terrorism has been around a long time. In fact, terrorism has decreased since the 1970s. They started NATO earlier than that. You can't talk history to this guy. He knows nothing. He's an ignoramus that knows nothing. But to me, the most important part of that quote is, did you hear what he said in the beginning? That when he was running for president and he's talking to Wolf Blitzer in an interview and he gets asked about NATO, he said, not knowing much about NATO. You're running for president. NATO is our top alliance.
And you just admitted you don't know anything about NATO while running for president. And he says, well, no, I figured it out. I'm in the White House now, and now I know what NATO is. Congratulations, little Donnie. Did you figure out what NATO is? Did you, after you became president? Wow, must be so proud. This buffoon, this child, this incompetent clown of all clowns is the president of the United States. Doesn't know anything and doesn't even realize he should know those things. The depth of his ignorance could doom us all. The president of the United States. This guy is the commander in chief. I didn't know what NATO was. I was running for president. I mean, who knows what NATO is? Did you know government is big? Did you know that? I didn't know. Golly gee, come in. It turns out you need heart. It turns out you got to care about people. I never cared about people before. And government, it's even bigger than a business. Who knew that? Of course, earlier he had said, healthcare is complicated. Nobody knew it. North Korea is complicated. Nobody knew it. No, Donald Schmuck. You're the only one who didn't know it. God help us all, Young Turks.